Pratt, Reel 2.
Undergraduates. There's a couple of questions I'd like to ask you about the outbreak of war. The first thing was, I wondered whether, while you were still in Scotland, when war was declared, whether the university company, by virtue of the unusual composition of its members, all being university graduates or undergraduates, I wonder whether the university company was drawn upon to provide officers for other units.
No. The looking back now, U Company should have been a reservoir, a first-class reservoir for officers, because when we mobilised, I myself as colour sergeant had 2 honours degrees, all my sergeants had degrees, some of them honours, and we had about a dozen fellows in the ranks who had degrees and had already got jobs and had come back to the company. But the commanding officer, Tommy Ogilvy, set his face against anybody applying for a commission, because he said, if I once start allowing members of U Company to go for commissions, he said, I admit to make good officers, we shall never get overseas, because they are the backbone of the battalion. And of course, you must remember that at that time, the talk was the war will be finished by Christmas, or will be finished early in 1915. And everybody was naturally, having joined up and so on, anxious to get out to France. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, nobody was allowed to apply for a commission. 2 of my sergeants did manage to wangle it. They got a day's leave to go to London. They didn't say why. They met somebody, I never discovered who had got a pull at the War Office. And when they got back, they came back, they told us they'd been to the War Office and they'd been commissioned.
Mm. Tell me this, did this situation change once you got out to France?
Yes, I could say this broadly, that every member of the company who wasn't killed, except one, got a commission, either in France or when he came back wounded. And that one man wouldn't accept the commission because he said, I'm going to be a clergyman, and therefore I prefer mm-hmm. to continue serving in the ranks to know the type of people I shall deal with as a clergyman.
When war was declared in August 1914, do you recollect any particular reactions of the people of Aberdeen or the members of the university to the declaration of war?
I can't remember anything specific. I know I can say this. There was nothing against it said. Mm-hmm. Everybody, I think, took the view that this war has been brewing for some time and now here it is. Let's get on with it.
I see. Was there much anti-German feeling in your part of the country?
There was not what you call very pronounced anti-German feeling, but there was a good undercurrent of feeling against the Germans. Mm.
Was it expressed in any particular way?
No, nothing in, what they did afterwards about being nasty to the Pomeranian dogs and things like that. Yes. And so on.
You mentioned something last time we spoke about the attitude to the German bands, which appeared
before the war. We got a bit fed up with the German bands, because every summer a German band would come round Aberdeen and would go down the various streets and would play for about half an hour at a time, move into another street, and became a goddamn nuisance, you see. It was only much later on we discovered that those bands were really spies in disguise. Mm. They were busy collecting information.
I've had comments on these German bands from people who lived in a great many parts of the country in 1914. And I hadn't realised until I had these comments that the German bands were so commonplace in this country before the war.
Oh, yes.
I wonder why that was.
Well, we thought it was all part of the German spy system to collect information about what was happening, fortifications, everything of that sort. Mm-hmm. You see, at that time, the Germans were infiltrating into British industry in a most remarkable manner. And as we discovered after the war started, in fact, you would say this, if the Germans had waited another 5-10 years, they wouldn't have needed to have had a war, because they would have so controlled our industries that we couldn't have fought.
Now let's go on to mobilisation itself.
Yeah.
What do you remember about the mobilisation of the battalion? Were there any problems in completing it at the outbreak of the war? Or was that a smooth operation?
My recollection is it went quite smoothly. As far as Hugh Cupley was concerned, we had to wait several days before we got our numbers complete, because, you see, we had dispersed from the camp about not quite a week beforehand, and a lot of the lads had returned to their homes, some as far in the distant isles, you see. So it took a little time for the letters to reach them and for them to get back.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, my recollection was that everything went very nice and smoothly, and there was no how do you do at all.
Mm. Do you have any particular recollections of the process of mobilisation, the kind of scene of the time?
No, afraid not.
Okay. Now, after the battalion had been mobilised, you spent a short time in England before going... Well, you spent a short time in Scotland before going down to Bedford. Were there, while you were still in Scotland, any rumours current of invasion threats or anything like that?
I can't remember in Scotland any rumours. We had a false alarm that the Germans had landed on the beach at Aberdeen, but that had been deliberately done by the sergeant major in order to see how quickly he could get us up at night and get us out and dressed and ready. But that was not a threat. But I believe that further south in England there were threats, because the Germans came and bombarded, was it Harrogate and some of the towns, not Harrogate, Scarborough, and some of the towns on that coast. Mm. And there was a feeling there that there might be an invasion.
Yes. How did the battalion react to this test of its efficiency when
the... Well, we were bloody annoyed. Oh, I mean, got out of bed for nothing at all.
Yes. When you were mobilised in Aberdeen at the beginning of the war, how well equipped was the battalion?
We had all our equipment except our ammunition, which was issued to us. I forget when it was issued, but it was issued to us later on. I don't think we had our issues of ammunition really until we went overseas.
Mm-hmm. Now, after mobilisation, you went down to Bedford in August of 1914, where the Highland Division was concentrating.
Yeah.
And I think this was mainly a period for more concentrated training. Could you tell me a bit about that training? Exactly what did it involve?
The training that we had at Bedford was chiefly drilling and marching and a certain amount of open warfare skirmishing. By the skirmishing, I mean you advanced by spread out in a line with probably 5-10 yards between you. You advanced by rushes of 20-30 yards, flopped down behind a bit of cover, and then supposed to go on firing from there. But it wasn't very popular, particularly when you had to do it over a ploughed field in the winter time, where you got your clothing and your rifle all thoroughly messed up. And that was the type of training based entirely on what had happened in the Boer War. Really. Mm.
Was any attention or training devoted specifically to trench warfare?
Nothing whatsoever. We were not even given any information worth speaking about at all about trenches, how they should be designed, how they should be constructed, and how they should be fortified, or anything like that. Probably it may have been because the trench warfare had already settled in by the end of 1914. The general military feeling of the higher command was, I believe, that as soon as spring came, they would start advancing and be back into open warfare, and that therefore there was no need to train in trench warfare. But there is the things that we should have trained in, as well as trenches, was this problem of crossing from A to B at night, and particularly leading over unknown country, say a platoon of men or a fatigue party. Because that is, we found, is one of the most difficult problems when you went out to France, even with a platoon of, say, 20 or 30 men, to be able to lead them in Indian fire in such a way that you didn't lose half of them.
Did you do no night exercises at all at Bedford?
We did one. Well, it wasn't really a night exercise. There was one planned, one night exercise was planned. And our company, D Company, was supposed to pray it at 11 o'clock at the Swan Inn. We prayed it at the Swan Inn at Bromham, which was the one we knew. We waited for 2 hours, nothing happened, and we came back again, marched back. We found that there were 3 Swan Inns at least around Bedford, and the other companies had gone to the other Swan Inns, so that there never had been any 2 companies meet together to have an exercise, which points out the importance in giving an order of giving a map reference so that the actual spot can be identified on the map.
Mm-hmm. Now that you were full-time soldiers preparing for serious business of war, was the discipline and organisation of the TA units tightened up in any way?
I should say yes, it was tightened up. Having had a Sergeant Major, Buick, who was ex-Scots Guards and a very strict disciplinarian, he applied that discipline very effectively to us colour sergeants and sergeants when we had a parade. If we were 5 seconds later on parade than the time, you were for it. In fact, his tightening up of discipline actually made the battalion what it was, and the bulk of the credit for the battalion really should be given to Sergeant Major Buick, who unfortunately caught meningitis, died, and as we were marching to the station to go overseas on February the 19th, we passed his cortege. Mm-hmm. It was very sad. Still, he'd done his job. Mm.
Now, you went to France with the battalion in February of 1915, and your first position was near Kemmel. When you got to France, was there any need, perhaps because winter was approaching, to issue any additional equipment or clothing to the troops?
When we got to, we went to Le Havre, we marched up to the top of the hill, and in freezing conditions, snow on the ground, and we were issued with not overcoats, but all the special police things, like skins with animal skins, goat skins, sheep skins, and so on, sort of an extra overcoat. Mm. And my God, we needed it.
Yes. This first position near Kemmel must have been one which sticks in your mind in the sense that it was your first experience of the trenches. What were your impressions of the trenches in this sector? What were they like?
The sector we went into first, they weren't trenches as we normally understood. That is continuous digging along in the ground, but rather a series of, what you say, built-up grouse butts, some of them as far as 100 yards apart. And they provided, of course, very good head cover, because you could stand up inside them, you see, without the enemy seeing you. And they also had, in some cases, built up what you call parados behind the trench, behind the butt, in order prevent any enfilade fire getting at you.
I see.
Because there, in those first trenches, which were labelled letters, B, C, D, F, G, H, so on, we were in front of what is called Wichit. and the Germans were on the high ground, and they had at least one sniper with most marvellous telescopic sights, because on one day one fellow went behind the parado of the trench to clean his Dixie, got shot, and several others went out one after the other, and each of them got shot, till finally there were eight people out there all hit, and the thing had to be stopped, which showed you the superiority that the German had at that time.
Clearly also a reflection on the quality of the trenches at that time. Were these trenches of British construction or French?
Those first trenches we had, I think, would have been French, that area being French trenches, and of course the French were a little bit casual, because the back area was generally a sort of latrine, the users of the latrine, and also they had been very casual in burying their dead. And in fact, one trench where I had a boot showing from the out of the side of the trench, and investigating, I found it was a Frenchman attached to the boot.
So they were building up their breastworks with dead bodies?
With dead bodies in there.
Did it?